This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
Yes, it's Worldwide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one country at a time. Joining me in the studio tonight, Ian is here.
Nice to be here.
Great to see you. And my name is Matt.
Now, Worldwide Wave has been taking you around the globe one country at a time for the past 8 years. I was just thinking, some of our listeners would have been at school, maybe primary school, when you and you were on in the early days, Matt, weren't you?
I was. In the very early days. So innocent.
Yes. And as another year draws to a close, and before we take a little break, which we all deserve over the summer period, we thought we'd bring you some of the most fabulous, the most inspiring, and the most engaging interviews of 2019.
Indeed, we have an absolute stellar lineup for you tonight. You'll hear from international LGBTI activist Peter Tatchell about his fascinating life and the part that Melbourne played in making him an activist.
We speak with India's first transgender politician, Apsara Reddy, in the National Congress of Parliament in India.
And we look at male body image in the gay community with Dr. Scott Griffiths from Melbourne University. And in here is a taste of what's coming up tonight.
Well, of course, I'm no longer religious. I gave that up when I was about 20, although I began to be sceptical and questioning about the age of 13 or 14. On the upside, because I always try to look for the silver lining, my parents always taught me that, and my church taught me that you have a personal responsibility for your actions and that you should never go along with the crowd. You should stand up for what is right and true and honest. And of course, they meant that in religious terms, but I interpreted it more broadly and widely.
I never realised until I sat down with Peter Tatchell that he grew up as a fundamentalist Christian. It was really a fascinating interview.
It is. For decades, the name Peter Tatchell has been synonymous with human rights. He drove campaigns in support of Aboriginal rights and campaigned against the death penalty. He was a leading member of UK's Gay Liberation Front, organising sit-ins in pubs that refused to serve the poofs.
He was also a founder of Direct Action Group Outrage. He played a part in campaigns from Russia and Zimbabwe. Remember him trying to arrest Mugabe in Belgium, I think it was. And he's been also involved in campaigns in South Africa and Iran. Now, wherever there's been injustice, chances are Peter Tatchell is going to be somewhere around there. He's still around, very active. This Melbourne-born activist joined us in the studio during a visit back home.
You were born in Melbourne. You were raised as a Christian.
Not just a Christian, but a fire and brimstone evangelical Pentecostal Christian.
How's that background shaped Peter Tatchell in 2019?
Well, of course, I'm no longer religious. I gave that up when I was about 20, although I began to be sceptical and questioning about the age of 13 or 14. On the upside, because I always try to look for the silver lining, my parents always taught me that, and my church taught me that you have a personal responsibility for your actions and that you should never go along with the crowd. You should stand up for what is right and true and honest. And, of course, they meant that in religious terms, but I interpreted it more broadly and widely. So inadvertently, it made me quite a questioning, sceptical person, including, ironically, about my own faith. In 1969, I realised I was gay. And amazingly, given my profoundly strict fundamentalist Christian upbringing, I didn't have any anxiety or guilt at all. I mean, I thought I might be gay Well, going back a bit further, at school, I thought I was straight. And I dated girls, but I didn't have sex with them because that was against the Christian religion. But I thought I was straight. Right. But lots of other boys at school thought I was gay. And they would call me Puff to Pete and Pansy Pete. But not in a vicious way. It was just like a jocular way. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, probably not acceptable. But I wasn't really offended by it.
That's what happened in those days. That was it. That was the norm.
In the summer, of course, you know, boys used to wear shorts and long white socks. And the other boys in the school always used to boast that I had the best legs in the school. And I used to get wolf whistled. But it was interesting that sort of, you know, it was homophobic, but the people who said that weren't my enemies. They were my best friends, you know. And it was not meant in a nasty or vindictive way. It was only after I left school and went to work in the design display department at Meyer in Bourke Street that I ever met any gay people. And they're all about my own age, completely disabused me of the stereotype of a gay man being a dirty old man who molested young boys. That was the only sort of image I'd ever heard, because you'd see it in the Truth newspaper or the Herald or the Sun, you know, a 56-year-old man arrested for molesting a young boy on a train or something like that. So that's what I thought a homosexual was. And then I met all these guys at work who were gay, mm-hmm. and about my own age, nice people, creative people. So I suppose in that circle, I was able to... First of all, I you know, ditched those stereotype views, because quite clearly these weren't the stereotypes at all. And I thought to myself, well, these homosexuals, they're very nice guys. What's the problem? Live and let live. But I still, because of my religious upbringing, I thought homosexuality was wrong. But over time, I began to think to myself, well, yeah, I dated these girls. I didn't have sex because it was against the Christian religion. But was I ever sexually aroused by them? Not really. I began to think, well, you know, I wonder. And so over a period of time, I began to sort of think, I wonder if I'm gay. I thought, well, the only way to test it out is to try it. And one of the seniors at work, senior, I was 17, he was 21, which I thought was a huge age gap, kept on inviting me out for dinner. I knew what dinner meant. I always say no. And it became a standard joke. Every night after work, he'd invite me home for dinner. This went on for about 3 or 4 months. And then one day I suddenly thought, oh, fuck it, you know. Okay. So I went home, and I remember he lived on Beaconsfield Parade in Middle Park, right on the beach, on the first floor, overlooking the beach. We had dinner at a table by the window, looking out over this beautiful, you know, summery evening. I think porpoises or dolphins in the bay. It was so romantic. And then after dinner, we watched a British sitcom, George and the Dragon. And then he said, would you like to go to bed? And I thought, well, it's now or never, I'll try it. So we had sex, and I remember lying back on the bed afterwards, thinking to myself, if this is what gay is, I am definitely gay. And to me it seemed so totally natural. I was so sexually and emotionally fulfilled. I remember my boyfriend... Well, he became my boyfriend for the next 3 years. That same night, he said, are you sure you've never had sex with a guy before? Because I seemed to know what to do. But all I was doing was copied what I'd seen men and women doing in movies. So we were together for 3 years, and we're still lifelong best friends. Fantastic. But from that moment onwards, I never had a moment of doubt. I said, the Bible is clearly wrong. You know, the sins the Bible condemns are sins or behaviours that cause harm to others. Okay. We weren't causing harm to anyone. In fact, this was a great emotional and sexual fulfilment. And how can, you know, we fell in love. How could love ever possibly be wrong?
I was talking earlier in the year to Peter Tatchell, and that was, I think, one of the highlights. That was highlights of my year. And just, I wasn't what I was expecting at all, Matt, really. I was expecting the firebrand, the activists of Peter Tatchell from all those other things we were talking about.
You got the tender coming out story.
Your first sexual experience story with all the dolphins, etc. So please message us in, you know, and tell us what you think of that. But, you know, he's still doing great, great work today through the Peter Tatchell Foundation. Well, and I just wanted to mention...
They've got their election on now.
Yeah, they've got an election on in the UK. Peter's very active in many areas. He's put out a call to all candidates for to call out for equality around eight particular measures. I won't go around all of them, but they are as broad as migrant areas, ethical foreign policy, blood equality such that gay and bisexual men can give blood donations, for PrEP to be made available for trans right, and the thing that he's really, really passionate about, which is relationships and sexual education in schools. He's doing great work today, and it's great to see actually he's got a source of funding now as well, because he lived in a council flat for many years, as he describes, in the middle of winter, this sort of time of year, he was sitting there with no heating on, with all these jumpers on, with nothing to eat.
So he came to Melbourne. Coming up, we look at gay male body image and the first transgender politician in India's National Congress. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Out, loud, proud, joy.
Now, in the lead-up to Mardi Gras this year, we looked at gay male body image and the dangers of taking body image to excess. Dr. Scott Griffiths from the Physical Appearances Research Team at the University of Melbourne joined us in the studio to discuss a worldwide study into this issue. Eating disorders, which previously was really only spoken about in females and, you know, catwalk models. So we asked Scott how it crept into the male domain.
Well, you're absolutely right. Eating disorders for a very long time were just considered the exclusive afflictions of women and young girls. And I think that's probably why they have been so underfunded for such a long time, because they were relatively easy to dismiss as just girls' and women's concerns. And fast forward to today, and the funding situation is getting better. But what you have is a body of research that was developed and evaluated almost exclusively with women. And if you're willing to accept that the types of bodies that men and women covet are different, and what attracts them to each other is different, and the sorts of dieting and behavior and drugs they might take to achieve the body they want is different, then the research has to be different. You can't assume that what works for women will generalize to men. And that's why you need research like gay bodies worldwide.
So has there been some research done previously, and where was that done?
We ran a pilot, actually, called Gay Bodies, which was just in Australia, and we also launched that through Grindr, and that was in 2017. And it was, like most of our research up until now, quite a small pilot study, and we thought, if we're lucky, we'll get around 100 people who respond and tell us what's going on with their bodies and their appearance. And we hit 100 people in about 22 minutes, which was extraordinary, and really let us know that this is not some isolated problem experienced by a few. There's something serious going on here.
Or we just like talking about ourselves.
Which is fine by me. I'm a psychologist, and the more people who are willing to tell me things about themselves, the better.
And was it a diverse group? I mean, were they all trying to achieve the body perfect ripped abs, or was it a...
No. No, their desires for their bodies were entirely diverse. There were older men who were thinking of having Botox because the wrinkles on their face they thought might be a liability in their workplace. There were young men who lamented looking young and thought that if they bulked up, people might take them a little more seriously in the workplace. There were men who felt too short and didn't feel respected in their friend groups because of that. There were men who were not the dominant skin color. They weren't white and felt discriminated against because of that, and it made them pay more attention to their skin, and they would think about skin lightening, all manner of things. But the problem with pilot studies like that one was you could only scrape the surface and only measure people one time. This time we're going global, and we're going to measure people 10 times over 5 years. I want to see how people change.
Some of those things you've mentioned are, I don't want to say they're minor, but I guess there's always a line with body image of what is improving yourself, what is being fit, what is, you know, maintaining a healthy lifestyle versus taking something to excess. What are the dangers of overstepping that line?
Well, first of all, I'm really glad you mentioned the line, because it's not the case that if you want to look better or be in the gym and lift weights, whatever, that you intrinsically have a problem. You don't. But if you overstep the line, if it becomes a preoccupation, then the consequence can be day in, day out misery. You might just feel so terrible about your appearance that it impacts on your day-to-day quality of life. It might impact your relationships, your intimate sexual relationships. It can manifest as all sorts of things that otherwise, if you didn't have them, you would feel a lot happier. And that is my principal concern.
And even, I would imagine, with some people, it would actually spiral downwards, that it could then take them into a space of taking drugs or steroids if they wanted to bulk up in a certain way, or really unhealthy behaviours.
Absolutely. We have needle and syringe services all around the country, and if you want to get drugs to inject yourself with, then we'll give you equipment to do so. It's a great service. We just ask, what was the last thing you injected? And the proportion of individuals who say, hey, the last thing I injected was anabolic steroids, that's been the number one reason among new injection drug users for the past 6 or 7 years. And it's just flying under the radar. And the idea that Australia has this influx of wannabe athletes is preposterous to me. They're by and large young men who don't like the way they look and want to use steroids to bulk up and get bigger.
We're going to talk a bit more about the pressures that sort of lead to that, but you brought up that sort of issue of bulking up, because I saw a term that I'd not heard before, bigorexia.
Yes.
Have I got it right?
Yes.
What is bigorexia?
A good starting point to understand bigorexia is like reverse anorexia. So say for a moment that you are a young girl and you desire to look like how we encourage young women to look, the conventional body ideal, which is thin and skinny. Then you might diet to try and lose weight. You might restrict very severely what you eat. You might use laxatives and diuretics to try and lose weight. And if that carries on for long enough, we call it anorexia nervosa. But let's say you're a young man and the type of body that you covet for yourself is not thin and skinny. You're invested in the conventional male ideal body that's lean and muscular. Well, you are probably not completely restricting your diet. The exercise you're doing is probably different. You're probably not abusing laxatives and diuretics. If you'll take a drug to try and get that body, it'll be anabolic steroids. And sure, you can't starve to death from eating a high protein diet, but certainly it can impart a whole load of misery for you. And unless you point your research apparatus in that direction, if you assume that young men in this country want to be thin and skinny, that's the ideal body they want, you will miss that.
That's Dr. Scott Griffiths from the Physical Appearances Research Team at the University of Melbourne, speaking to us here on Joy 94.9. Really insightful.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that interview before. I thought it was really interesting. I come from a public health background, as many of you know as well, though. And, you know, most of us don't have ideal bodies. And the research says that something like 90% of us don't do enough exercise. So don't let that be, you know, don't let the take-home message be, don't do enough exercise. Yeah, all of us need to do a bit more exercise. But yeah, there's a small number of people who definitely have some issues with being addicted to exercise or some of the substances that go with that.
Our diverse communities have one home, Joy.
Hi everyone, my name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You're listening to Worldwide Wave. Lots of love to everyone at Joy 94.9.
Richard from Adelaide listening in. Really interesting show. Thanks. Thanks, Richard. Lovely to have you with us here tonight on Joy 94.9.
Now, I think it was October, the beginning of October, and we celebrated 1 year since the decriminalisation of homosexuality in India. And we spoke with Apsara Reddy. She's the first transgender politician in the Indian National Congress Party. And during the interview, we found out that Apsara's surprisingly close link to the LGBT community here in Melbourne.
And given we have almost reached the one-year anniversary of our decriminalisation case, Do you think that India is ready for progressive changes? Because the law alone simply can't determine what happens in the society.
Honestly, Sai, I really feel that Indian people are the most accepting people in the whole world. I've lived in London, I've lived in Australia, I've lived in the US. I feel Indian people do not, they might not openly accept you and embrace everything that you want to be, but they're definitely not as violent as what I've seen in other communities around the world. So I really feel Indian people are ready for change, but how the change is, you know, presented to them is also very important. The message is twofold. I tell my transgender sisters also that, you know, you being transgender is fine, but don't have to shove it down people's throats. You don't have to, you know, be animated and gesture and, you know, rub your sexuality and gender on somebody's face. Mainstream yourself. Try and access spaces which everybody accesses. Try and, you know, maintain a code of conduct. So a lot of times, you know, for people to understand that, we also need to kind of toe the line sometimes.
Understood. And what, in your opinion, still needs to change?
I think what needs to change is, I think we need to have an open mind towards diversity, be it the heterosexual community or the LGBT community. All of us need to kind of make space for diversity. Within our micro communities of LGBT, we have a lot of hate. You know, there's a lot of politics between the LGBT community itself. I think we need to be a lot more open-minded, and we need to accept diversity and the dimension diversity brings to our community and to our society. I think in celebrating diversity, we're celebrating human rights. And I think by denying somebody the basic right to be who they are, we're doing a grave injustice to the human rights movement. So I feel LGBT communities, heterosexual communities should actually make space for diversity and have a dialogue of understanding between each other.
In this 12-month period, we're coming up to this anniversary. Do you think that there's been much change in public attitudes, or do you think that those progressive attitudes, which are there, as you say, were there all along? Do you think Do you think that the law has made much, the Supreme Court decision has made much of a difference?
I think public attitudes have changed because visibility has increased by leaps and bounds. A lot of transgender women and transgender men and gay men and lesbian women and all kinds of people coming out in mainstream media, giving quotes, giving television interviews. A lot of political parties have started including LGBT rights in their manifestos and their agendas. So visibility has grown by leaps and bounds. But I also think that just visibility alone wouldn't change much unless we have legal rights. And I think we need to have access to a lot more legal rights in terms of inheritance, in terms of marriage, in terms of, even in education forms to identify as transgender, as lesbian or gay or whatever. I think those need to change.
I'd seen in particular around HIV, which is the topic that I've been involved in for many years, that there were at least some measures now which were setting up HIV services which were specific to the LGBT or different parts of the LGBT community. Are there any other examples that you might have?
I think the HIV campaigns have, for very long, even before this 1 year, have focused aggressively on the LGBT community because they've linked the HIV issue to the LGBT community alone. I think HIV campaigns need to broaden their perspective and deal with us as a population and not just as LGBT communities, because a lot of the blame for HIV has been, in India at least, is laid on the LGBT community, which I feel is very unfair. In saying that, I think we also need to have a lot more access to LGBT HIV testing centers, which are sensitive, which have trained counselors, who understand sexuality and the nuances of, you know, being LGBT.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so, given that, like, even I'm from Chennai and my parents, despite being, like, highly educated and my mom being a doctor, she knows what it means to be LGBTQI+, but, like, she wouldn't necessarily want it for her own daughter. Do you understand what I mean?
I completely understand. I understand where she's coming from as well, Sai. I understand your journey and your fight to be who you are. And I've gone through it with my parents. No matter how educated and exposed and well-meaning they are, I think for people have been mentally conditioned to think of this as something which is wrong and it's an anomaly. Something that can be cured. And that's the kind of image that's been fed to even the most educated and the most empowered. So it's something which we have to, you know, we have to kind of constantly break that notion that, you know, we're also extremely normal human beings and there's nothing abnormal about us. There's nothing that we're doing that's going to be completely different against what other people are doing. Like, we just love differently, and I think loving differently shouldn't be a reason for us to be silenced, shouldn't be a reason for us to be attacked, shouldn't be a reason for us to be judged. I think loving differently is also beautiful. I think love can be of all kinds, and we should celebrate all shades of love.
Now, you're listening to Worldwide Wave, and this is Joy. And we were talking there to Apsara Reddy from the Congress, the Indian National Congress. She's the first transgender woman to be actually part of Congress. And we had quite an extended interview with her. And what really came out from that for me was, well, one, all the connections that she had. She started out on a radio show here at Joy 94.9.
I know, wasn't that amazing?
Yeah, that was amazing. And then there were... We really spoke, we focused in that interview on what had changed and what was changing in India. And clearly things have happened in India since the High Court judgment, which overturns the old homosexuality
the English
criminalization.
Sodomy
laws. Yes, all of that. So things have changed, but also things are changing quite slowly. And the current issue on the issue in India is there's a trans... there's a trans protection bill, I think it's called, but it's not really a protection bill, actually. It brings in a whole bunch of further discrimination against trans people. And
is it like a religious equality bill, perhaps?
A little bit, yeah. There's a whole bunch of things in there which people are fighting for at the moment. And, of course, there are a billion people in India, so this is impacting lots.
I'm interested in this, and I'm interested in what our listeners think, because coming up, we've got a story on global tolerance of LGBTI people. It's on the rise. So I'm interested, have you noticed that? Do you feel more accepted? Is it perhaps just a part of a generational change, younger people more tolerant, older people less? Maybe for Australia, maybe marriage equality's had an input.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Dzień dobry. I am Kylie from Poland. It's great to have a place like Joy 94.9, where we can talk about trans issues from across the globe on a worldwide wave.
And it has been wonderful reliving a few of these interviews tonight. Of course, you can find all of the full interviews and a few more. There's a few actually that we had such a good time chatting to them, and Peter Tatchell was one, that there's an extended podcast on there. So Peter Tatchell from the Peter Tatchell Foundation does great work. Dr. Scott Griffiths from the University of Melbourne and Apsara Reddy, India's first transgender politician. All those podcasts are at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or your favourite podcast platform. We're out there on iTunes, on Shopify, Spotify, that's it. Yep, we're everywhere.
And Apple and Podbean and Stitcher and all of them. There's so many different places to get your podcast these days.
Little trick for ours, W3Joy is our shortcut, is our, you know, abbreviation, if you like. W3Joy, you can find ours, come up pretty quick.
And just thinking of joy and podcasts and all the ways in the new world that you can connect, I'm thinking of Joy Nation. And this has been a campaign that's been running for several weeks now. Joy is, in some ways, we're a little bit concerned with how we're going to move into the next generation Joy.
The media landscape's changing
all the time, and you've got to be modern. We're moving to the Pride Centre, obviously, next year. Very, very exciting to do that. But we can't do it on hot air alone. We've got lots of support from great sponsors. We've got some interest from the state government. But we need your support, both as membership and as making donations to a new campaign called Joy Nation.
And how can you donate?
You can donate by going to joy.org.au.
That can be your Christmas present to us to keep us on air.
And your Christmas present to all of your family, actually. You just give them a little receipt of your donation, your tax donation. Because you could make all of your holiday presents tax deductible by making them to Joy. Isn't that a good idea?
And we will send you lots of hugs and kisses, as we do to all the messages we've had in tonight. Richard from Adelaide, Rex, Sue, Esther, Keith, Elizabeth on Facebook. Also, thank you to Evelyn on the front desk joining us tonight. And behind the scenes, our podcaster, Alex, and social media master, Dean.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7pm Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.